Nash being chased, and they had him. Oh, look out. As Ori sent Nash flying, and Bell goes at Ori. Nash got up. He wants to go at Ori. The Suns did not appreciate the foul by Robert Ori.
Robert Ori,
I'm good, but I probably should. It to you, or else you could just pass me off as another motherfucker saying the same thing. I'd be hurt, but I couldn't be blamed.
Recording has started. The wine is there. The other drink is there.
The backup drink.
The backup drink.
Drink and the backup drink.
The hooker with the lines of cocaine is lying on the bed in case I really need to get going.
We are not on a cocaine budget. We're barely on a fucking Nang's budget.
That's our
budget.
Our shipping container sponsors.
Moving into houses that used to have meth labs in them and licking the walls budget.
Dear. Well, it could be worse.
Topical
it could
New Zealand content there.
You could have busted out the best podcast of your life, sort of, you know, next level podcast, and at the end, your hopeless partner could have said, "Oh, I didn't record any of that." And we still wouldn't be as bad as J.R. Smith.
We have J.R. Smith this podcast a few times. Let's be real on that.
We are both J.R. Smith in this situation. Neither of us is LeBron.
We didn't do it. We didn't do it in game one of the fucking NBA finals.
No, and we didn't do it where it's not like above our desks, there is a huge 6 foot high display that says, "Hey, you haven't turned on the recording."
That's true.
Because that's essentially
button,
what happened to JR.
The red button isn't sort of on both ends of the building, and there's not a crowd watching and screaming about it.
It's sort of highly ironic that LeBron, whether or not you go for the, you know, you can either say he has influence or he is the GM of the Cavs and he makes all the personnel decisions. But there's no doubt that Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith are there because he wanted them there. It's sort of funny to watch him pull out one of the most unbelievable playoff games ever and then lose because of the guys that he really wanted on the side.
This is a milder version of the "it's LeBron's fault" argument that the crossover have just busted out. So
I don't know whether it's
congratulations on that one.
I don't know whether it's
J.R. Smith is a fucking moron, and that is the responsibility of no one except for J.R. Smith.
Yeah.
J.R. Smith, when he's good, can win you a final series. J.R. Smith was crucial in 2016. J.R. Smith is a fucking moron for not knowing what the score was at the end of the game and dribbling the ball out. And then claiming in the press conference that he knew that the game was tied and he was expecting someone to call the timeout, which contravened the things he said to his coach and the things you could read on his lips on the fucking floor. We've accelerated to the end of a very busy week in the NBA.
Oh, yes.
The week started
we could insert the record scratch with that.
We'll start with the start. We'll start with the Rockets winning enough quarters to win a game from the Warriors, but somehow managing to lose two games against the Warriors and not proceeding to the NBA Finals. Pretty much because third quarter Dubs came back and third quarter Dubs all over the motherfucking plate.
That stat that I think Strauss put out first, but you know, when it went around the traps of the Dubs plus minus for the four quarters over the finals is just
they're like plus 100 and lots.
It was like plus 5, plus 2, plus 136, plus 7. It's like it's weaponized basketball is what it is.
But the thing is that in the earlier games, in the games that the Rockets had either won or come close in, they'd held serve against third quarter Dubs. But when they get on a roll, they just get ahead, and you just don't see them for dust.
It would be interesting the mindset of a team being up 10 at halftime. Like you'd think you go into halftime going, "Yeah, we're up 10. Let's push this game out." But if you're up 10 going into the third quarter against the Dubs, you'd sort of feel
you're behind by 10.
Maybe, yeah, just a touch behind. Mate, we didn't do enough in that quarter. We didn't do enough when they were
watching. When I literally stopped watching when the Warriors got within six, because I was like, I know exactly what's going to happen, and I've got something else I can do, and I'm going to go and do that something else, because it's just so fucking inevitable.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Clay woke up.
No, they're pretty good. They're better than like every other. And I mean, the Rockets were out. You know, lost Chris Paul, and from that point they were pretty much toast. But forced them to play even more ISO and put even more through James Harden. And by the end, as you pointed out, I mean, when they missed 37 fucking 3-pointers in Game 7. It wasn't just magic and it wasn't just luck. It was the fact that they were completely
fucking
exhausted. And when you were tired, your ability to do fine motor stuff like throw a ball into a hoop under pressure goes away from you.
It's I found it really strange that all these writers, a lot of who are very smart people, sort of were looking at it like it was pure mathematics and not things that humans do. And it's not like playing 7 regular season games. Like, those games were fucking hard and fast. Like, I know they were sloppy, but, you know, the picks, like, I was watching the highlights of Game 6, and because I knew the result, I was just watching Steph in the fourth quarter, and he just fucking runs. He gives up the ball. He fucking sprints down to the corner. He stops, waits a second for the ball. The ball doesn't come to him, so he goes up, sets a pick, sprints to the other corner, curls around to this fucking dude. Just doesn't stop. I was exhausted watching the defender just fucking chase him through two or three screens at the same time.
But when you've got all those all-stars, they don't have to go flat out the whole time, whereas Harden and Paul Williams on the field, and of course LeBron, who's had to play a couple of 46 to 48 minute games in this series to get here.
They didn't have that
luxury.
Yeah, and I just didn't think that it was this amazing statistical outlier. I just thought that shooting less and less of
it. It wasn't a moratorium on Morey ball. It was just a tired team missing shots.
And look,
because you know, there's been this argument that the Dubs look really tired of each other, and you know, they're sick of each other's shit. But the Rockets just look tired.
Yeah,
and I mean they're close, but they're not going to get any younger. They're old and they're tired, and they're going to be older and tired in next year.
I just think their margin was skinnier. Like they.
And they had no margin at all.
Well, when Luke Mbamute did his shoulder, did his shoulder, like that was the little margin that they had sort of disappeared. Yep. And then, you know, if they'd had him, maybe they could have jagged one of the last two. But
they took it to 7 purely because Iggy wasn't there.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean, the Warriors are just so... are so much better, and they know they are so much better that they can afford to just piss about and they know they will win in the end.
And
this went longer than they probably wanted it to, but they got there in the end.
And the other thing is too, is that the storyline of Chris Paul, you know, how unlucky is it that Chris Paul did his hamstring? that ain't unlucky. The dude's got a history of soft tissue injuries, and the fucking Dubs ran him through the ringer for six, you know, for 5 games. Absolutely fucking made him work every single possession that he was on. Because they knew that maybe it wasn't a hamstring injury. Maybe he just got tired and started getting grumpy and picking on the refs. But they knew that he was the weak point in terms of fatigue. And the closer they got to 7 games, the more of a factor that him, you know, blowing up in some way was there. I think that was completely deliberate.
Yeah, and you would. If you're playing an old team, you run them.
Yeah.
You run them and you see what goes ping. On the other side, in the Eastern Conference came down to the Game 7, and after all that talk we did last week about the evolution of NBA pace and that great article by Kevin Spelton and Arnovitz, those last two games in the East were some of the slowest games of basketball imaginably. I think it was like 20-something apiece nearing halftime in Game 7. It was partly because the Cavs turned into stormtroopers. They just could not shoot.
Yeah.
I think people who weren't LeBron were none for 10.
And then the Celtics did the same in the last game.
Yeah, and then the Celtics did exactly the same thing. But finally, some other people started to shoot some shit, and See Us Rise became See You Next Time. Jeff Green, I've got a note. Jeff Green is like a HQ Kingswood with three on the tree. He's got no clutch. And that's exactly, there's a bit of a car joke there for nobody. I'm going to delete that in post. It's all Bill Simmons' fault because he, at one point in a pregame, compared his crowd to Black Panther.
Oh, no, he didn't, did he?
Boston white guy. Oh, he absolutely did.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely did. And LeBron played all 48 minutes. I didn't even watch all 48 minutes. That's how dedicated he is and how dedicated I'm not. So that was a weird series because you could argue by the end of it, the Celtics, despite lacking their two best players, they probably had four of the best five players on the court. If you take LeBron out, there was nobody else on the Cavs who was any fucking good.
Yeah.
You know, who wasn't better than any of the Jalens or the Jasons or the Marcuses or the Owls. You know, all they had was fucking Jeff Green and a misfiring Kyle Korver. And that was all he had. So
I feel a bit sorry for Kyle Korver. He should be the fifth best player at best on a championship side. And he'd be awesome at that, you know?
He should be Mike Miller on those Heat teams.
Like even, yeah, he plays a very different role to Iggy, but he's like a much lesser Klay Thompson where he doesn't have to create. He shouldn't have to create. All he should do is run around all day and hit some threes, but he gets, you know, he's just got to do so much more on that side. Yeah, it was a little bit... I feel the same about the Celtics that I did about Philly in that I actually think the loss is good for them. I don't think making it to the next round would have been the best thing for that side.
Well, they were always playing with house money, and I reckon some... I mean, there's going to be some trading. Probably, I would say Marcus Smart or Scary Terry... Somebody like that was going to get packaged up with a pick to try and land somebody big. Although, I'd say their chances of getting Anthony Davis are probably a lot lower now that the Pels actually look decent, and they probably want to hang on to everybody.
Do you think that they will do that though? Because they've got draft picks coming, and they're going to get two alpha dogs back, or you know, Hayward's not really an alpha dog, but Kyrie definitely is. Why wouldn't they just see what happens with those two guys and get another high draft pick this year and another high draft pick next year and just keep sustaining?
Half dry pick.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, I haven't even started drinking.
I'm just wondering what a half dry pick is. it's a pick that you haven't dropped in your beer and you can still play with.
Yeah, I just think that they might be a little bit more sustainable about it rather than sort of chasing the super team straight up.
Well, the problem is their time's going to run out because, I mean, the Sixers are going to be much better next year. I think we'll get to the Sixers very shortly. But on paper, on the court, the Sixers are going to have a new GM and they'll have a much better chance at, say, landing some of the big fish, some of the sort of large, sweaty, 270-pound, balding...
48-minute-a-game.
In inverted commas, small forward type dude.
He's not
longevity.
He's not a small forward. He's a tank. He's just... Yeah. I don't know who it was.
He's a small forward F-150. That's the kind of small forward he is.
Someone said today he's like, you know, having... Malone and Kyrie in the same body on the same team at the same time. Like he can, he's pretty remarkable. I don't think there's too many, you know, Skip Bayless aside, who is basically performance art at this stage.
Exactly.
All his critics are pretty much like, and I was one of them.
Oh, but
like,
no, they're still out here. They're still giving it LeBron passed up the last shot. LeBron, yeah, just, you know, all that kind of bullshit MJ mentality fucking, it's sort of a cross between the MJ, you know, 6-0 in the finals and the Kobe Mamba mentality bullshit. That's all become a fictitious narrative, really. Mm. You forget it. It's fucking confirmation bias. You forget all the times they fucked up and the times they got their asses kicked. You forget that Jordan was trash until he got Pippen. Mm. Didn't win shit until he had a decent 2IC.
Pat threw an interesting thing out there, and I don't think LeBron would ever do it because I just think he's just like, I don't think he could stop. But how long could he extend his career if he took a year off? And just, you know, basically rested up and then came back and, you know, picked his side and then went for it? I know he wouldn't because he's leaving.
Well, I think if he was injured, you could see the argument for that. But I don't think he's carrying anything. I think he's just a...
No, mate, he's just fucking unbelievably fit.
He did have that period where he had a few back problems and things like that, but that seems to have cleared up.
No, he does all that crazy, you know, he does football and he does that. He's got that, like, it's like a soft... Yeah. Half thing that he stands on and shoots that, you know, you're activating your core and, yeah. I don't think there's much that he could do that he doesn't do, you know.
Well, I mean, the argument, the famous line is that he spends $1 million a year on his own health outside of what... Outside
the team does.
The team does.
Yeah.
So he just peels off, you know, what's that? Probably 1% of his income if you factored it all.
But it's also the, like, you know, you can say that and I would love to have the time to be able to go and train, but then, you know, go and get a massage or go to a physio or stuff when you start getting a few niggles so that you could train harder, because for someone like me, once you start getting a few niggles, you basically just have to rest, whereas he can, you know, go and do something about it. But you've also got to have the will to be able to do that stuff constantly, and I just don't, even in the NBA, I don't think there's that high a percentage of people that are willing to do that. And like, when you do, you get stories like Oladipo, who basically went from a guy that was, you know, doing the work but not probably doing the work that he could be doing, to doing the sort of, you know, getting up to the LeBron level work, and then all of a sudden, you know, was maximizing the talent that he had. I listened to The Breakaway by Rob Mahoney this week about the Heat, and in particular Ellington, and they're talking about, you know, the Heat way and the way that they train and the fact that it's, they sort of have to recruit a personality type because they get some players there that just don't want to do the work, you know, that don't want to rock up every week for skin fold tests and don't want to have to do, you know, be gym junkies and stuff like that. But you can see why the Heat maximise their talent pool, I guess. And I'd be really interested to see what would happen if they got another superstar from scratch, you know, not a sort of free agent superstar, but someone that they came in as a rookie that they could groom up with that sort of work ethic. Because at the moment, they're sort of maxing out a bunch of mid-level guys rather than having any genuine stars.
The Heat are not in the NBA playoffs. The fact that we're talking about the Heat, it sort of is an indication of just how disinterested everybody was with Cavs Dubs version 4. It was a little bit like, say, a remake, a sequel to a movie that was being remade, but without some of the key characters. So it was sort of Kyrie had been written out and all the rest of it. It was a little bit like Fast and the Furious 4. And in this environment, broke the news of a little investigation that that Bill Simmons' little website had done, possibly the first piece of actual investigative journalism they'd ever done. That's because somebody came to them with it. And what did that piece of investigative journalism turn up?
Well,
we don't have to say allegedly, because we're on the other side of the world, and that kind of defo shit doesn't affect us.
Well, it was interesting the way that they framed it, and they did a little podcast on it, and it was even more interesting because they were very, very painful to say. We are not saying
they have
that
to be. And Rob Perez has been really big on this, in that the Colangelos are massively litigious people, and that's how they got to be where they are, and they're going to go somebody. So, the backstory to this, folks,
and the fact
do you want to do it?
Yeah, yeah. So. There was a Sixers, is he a beat writer or a blogger? He seems like a pretty serious journalist, but...
But Detrick, yeah, he's a known journalist. I mean,
but don't know who he is, but... Obviously a freelance guy, not a, you know, not associated with a paper.
I think he writes for The Ringer semi-regularly, but he also places stuff for other things. You know, there's quite a lot of journalists like that who write for the SB Nation side of their local... of their local team, and they write for the network that broadcasts it. Maybe they've got a website and they write for that, and, you know, they'll submit other bits of stuff freelance.
So he had an anonymous source come to him and say, hey, there's these 5 Twitter accounts. They
I think it's important to say that it's an anonymous source volunteered the information that they were basically a massive nerd who worked in artificial intelligence.
And
they'd
yeah.
used some artificial, they'd used some open source software to sort of, they'd seen some stuff and they'd followed up some stuff and they'd kind of looked at the following patterns and the tweeting patterns of these particular sock puppet troll accounts that were tweeting about the Sixers.
It's a little bit like in Vanessa's world where they have this software now that basically runs, you know, runs across every bit of stuff that's written to check for plagiarism. You know, it's checking for similar phraseology, you know, patterns essentially is what it's looking for. And this guy picked up the fact that these five accounts had very similar patterns. They followed the same people. They
very specific people too that were kind of very odd that these people would be in common.
Yeah, and this is the really damning thing for Colangelo, because even if it's not here,
well, we have to point out that the idea was that it was alluded to that that these accounts were tweeting in defence of Brian Colangelo, the GM of the Sixers, against people like Sam Hinkie, who had been, you know, who obviously was a massive fan favourite in that Sixers fan market.
But the most damningly, leaking information about players that were still at the club and his superstar players.
Yeah. Basically trying to argue, you know, all the, you know, trying to sort of argue on his behalf, well, you know, give the reasoning behind all these decisions and things like that. They also happened to follow, like, people who Colangelo knew from his social circles in other cities and his former agent and a whole lot of other things, which is very strange for a bunch of random Twitter accounts to do. Also, the fact that each of them was set up on the day of some big bit of news breaking in the Sixers world that put Colangelo in a bad light.
Well, and the worst one,
sort of circumstantial Venn diagrammy content here, but the problem is that he was. These accounts were tweeting stuff that was the kind of stuff that only Colangelo or somebody incredibly close to him would know about.
And the really smart one that Dietrich and Ryan did, and the real sort of closer that I think helped publish the piece, was they went to Philly and said, we've got these two accounts that we think are very similar, you know, like they basically laid the story out, but only said two Twitter accounts. We found these two Twitter accounts. You know, what's your official response? And they said, oh, we'll come back to you. We'll go and talk to Brian. We'll come back to you. They go and talk to Colangelo, and the other three accounts immediately become private. And it's just like, oh yeah, we've got you. And
well, he's claimed responsibility for one of them, which apparently never really said anything too toxic, but the others he hasn't.
Mm.
The others he's disclaiming and, you know, giving it the full King Lear, you know, rampant revenge claiming denials.
Well, Lowen Windhorst posted an article this afternoon saying that the Sixers Lowen Woj, sorry. That it's probably.
They did some really cool analysis, and I watched some of this stuff happening live because Worldwide Wob, Rob Perez, was sort of coordinating his bunch of fucking internet randoms, the people who hang around, who follow him, to sort of do it. And they were doing analyses like trying to find out what the security bailout password was on, like, what's the rescue email account and what's the rescue phone number on these Twitter accounts, and tracing it back to numbers they knew were associated with various people. And
Dietrich said this as well on his podcast. He's like, once you open it up to the world, there's so many, like, you know, there's a lot of crazy people that follow the NBA. And there's a lot of...
And particularly the Sixers, because the Sixers have got all those process truthing, you know, hard-out analytic-type people. They've probably got the highest concentration of hard-out, you know, quants, as they're called, you know, people who are into that sort of quantitative analysis, than any other fan base. And they're the sort of people who'll do this sort of shit.
Yeah, but there's also a lot of smart people with a lot of very smart... you know, there's people that can do deep dives on this stuff that journalists don't have time to do and probably don't have the skill set to do.
I mean, a journalist wouldn't have the knowledge to do this sort of stuff. So I think you were getting around to the point that if it's not Colangelo, it's entirely possible it could be his wife, because that would explain why the account was tweeting about, games that their son was playing in at college. They'd explain why some particular turns of phrase that don't really make sense in English were being used because she's Italian. That could explain why some of the accounts follow an Italian Bible quote site.
It might be a very strange thing. Might also
for multiple random Twitter accounts to follow.
It might also explain the admiration of Embiid's abs, which was posted a few times. I saw. Yeah.
And the defense of Colangelo's collars.
Yes,
he's had these huge collars because he apparently got that habit in Italy where he was coaching and where he
which I know he I know you are you're not the fan of Game of Zones, but that is absolutely going to be heavily featured in Game of Zones next week for sure, the collar thing. It's just
who needs Game of Zones when real life is this funny? I mean, that's the single funniest thing I've ever fucking seen.
As it unfolds, it's getting up there with the... It's not quite at the DeAndre Jordan locking himself in a house till midnight to not sign with the Mavericks.
That's a longer sustained thing.
Yeah. And for us, that happened like during the day. Like, not everyone was sort of awake in the US, but we're following it, you know, during the day. Like, I don't think I got a single jot of work done that day. I was glued to Twitter. It was just hysterically funny. But this is up there. But the thing is that
I should also say that the main account, which has been inferred to potentially belong to his wife, has been responsible for also being linked to a fan-sided account, which is like a Reddit for basketball fans or for team sports. And these very, very long, strident posts defending Colangelo that would make sense if it was an angry, emotional partner or a massive narcissist writing about himself.
Mm.
So either of these two things certainly seems the game.
I think...
Roger Goodell's wife used to do this, by the way. She was the head of the NFL. His wife used to have accounts where she would come out and defend him anonymously against in shit posts. But she wasn't sharing confidential information about players' medical histories and reasons why their trades got
unless Colangelo can prove that it's Sam Hinkie or one of his, you know, offsiders, he's gone. Like
the thing is, you can't prove it's Sam Hinkie because Sam Hinkie wasn't in the meetings.
No,
that's to know the like information. It would need to be a mole in the organization. It need to be his 2IC. I mean, it would be really interesting to find out who is behind the
league,
the insider, the tipster, because there's some suggestion. You know, there was obviously the inference that, you know, this guy claimed to work in artificial intelligence, and the one of the things that Hinkie's involved in when he's working in Silicon Valley is artificial intelligence. So, I mean, it'd be good to know who the Sixers Enough account actually is, but it's kind of not the point.
The timing, I mean, of this, it.
These accounts have been very fucking obvious. They've been tweeting at Sixers media, Sixers beat writers, saying, "Why don't you talk to Jahlil Okafor about why his physical failed?" I mean, it's not like this is stealth. This was very fucking obvious that this was going on. It's just that nobody ever kind of sat down and tried to put, you know, overlay the Venn diagrams of the tweeting and the content and the word structures being used and who they were following and the fact that they were all following each other and all that sort of shit.
One of the funniest things was Zach Lowe just absolutely distraught by the knowledge that now he's going to have to check his mentions because there might be some little, you know, he's such a professional and there might be some little nugget of information that's in those replies. You know, it's probably one in a million fucking random people yelling at him, and, you know, after he's made a very smart and on point, you know, piece. But it's just... The NBA, like, I made a joke that this is sort of like, this is the sort of storyline that Silver would cook up for the slow week of the off season, but it just keeps coming, doesn't it?
Well, it we didn't even get a chance more than a day to say, well, Cavs dubs 4 sounds a bit boring. Mm. And then suddenly, bang, it's like, whoa, okay, we've got something to keep us busy for a few days.
And then
my question to you is, who else, what other NBA general manager or owner or coach should have a burner account?
Oh, you know Maury's got one, for sure.
Oh, no. But whose would you like to read?
Whose would I like to read? Well, I reckon Stan Van Gundy's would be pretty funny.
Well, you'd have to be somebody who's been his, wronged. His, and has or a lot
Tibbs.
Of
Tibbs would just be Tibbs. Fire, ice.
There has to be somebody who's on the wrong side of history right now and desperately wants to defend their worldview but isn't really able to.
Well, the one that
you have to be somebody who's still got a job. So Tibbs would be a perfect example.
How do you
type in gravel?
Yeah.
I reckon he's doing a really good job.
His would be all caps all the time, for sure. Now, the two coaches that I reckon would have been interesting, who are both no longer in the league, is our mate performance artist from the Lakers and Mark Jackson.
Well, Byron Scott doesn't have any filter, so when he's on the jump, he's pretty much that guy.
Byron Scott.
Imagine how paranoid and imagine what the other posts would be that would go along with Mark Jackson's one. He would be, I mean, that was something they alluded to, was the fact that the posts, apart from the non-basketball content, was not particularly aligned with the general progressiveness of NBA basketball. So some of the sentiments being expressed about the Muslim ban and various other things of that nature were much more in alignment with, let's say, the NFL than the NBA.
One of the funny things about this Wayne Ellington breakaway podcast was, you know, he's a good three-point shooter, you know, and needs that sort of feel and volume to be an effective player. And his coach, like his pathway through the league was Lionel Hollins, Byron Scott, then Lionel Hollins again at the Nets. And who was this? Someone else, but basically all coaches that
were... You said this was a coaching pathway.
Well, this was all coaches that basically, you know, were the anti-three-point section of the NBA community. And it's like, oh, you've been traded to Byron Scott. Oh, damn.
You've been traded to 1994. Congratulations.
Oh, geez. It must be. Yeah. Wouldn't have been fun. So we think he's gone. So Philly
he's hired. Untenable because even if he was able to say, look, it wasn't me, it was my wife, you still wouldn't trust him. There'd be enough doubt that he would be compromised any time he wanted to recruit a free agent, or you know, you just can't trust him. There's enough stink to him. It's not possible to believe that he's not involved somehow.
He
said them things, or he said them things to somebody who then went and tweeted them, because nobody else could be in that. No one else could create that circumstance. And he's going to spend a lot of money and retain a lot of lawyers to try and muddy that up. But who else knows all that shit?
Yeah. It's just there's just too much coincidence.
Yeah, I mean, if it turns out Sam Hinkie spent a lot of money on private investigators to tail him and get all that information and has been doing this as a long revenge con.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome.
It's even better.
It's even funnier.
It's even funnier, for sure. So that shit keeps bubbling on, and the NBA hate it, but everybody else loves the shit out of it because it's hilarious.
Well,
and then the NBA finals started.
Mm. LeBron
fought bravely and died eventually, it was pretty fucking shit. I really hated that game. I absolutely hated the ending. I hated everything about it. I imagine it's like being the sort of person who watches a lot of prestige drama TV series and watching your favorite character get killed at the end of a show. You know, it sucked. It was unjust and it was unfair and it was shitty. And the bad guys won in the end. So fuck the NBA. This is now an NHL podcast.
Do you think KD likes playing for the Warriors?
No.
Like,
I think they're going to run him out of town. I think all of the hate and all the slander and all the salt, all of the, oh, fuck KD, here comes KD. KD's had his ISOing again. I mean, he got booed at home when he airballed. He's going to leave that fucking joint.
Mm.
They're going to run him out of town.
I think he really enjoys the off-court stuff. Like, I think he likes those guys and he likes San Francisco and he likes, you know, the startup culture and, you know, sort of setting his life out for the next phase, I don't know whether his style really meshes with the Warriors. And he almost gums them. He almost gums them up. Like, some of those runs that have been kickstarted is where they've given the ball back to Curry and said, you just fucking run the show 100%.
Well, that was the case against the Rockets, wasn't it? I mean, some of the best runs they had to try and run down. Those third quarter Dubs runs were started when, you know, the ball was in Curry's hands as a facilitator. It wasn't all fucking KD gumming the shop up.
Mm. I don't know whether he'll leave, though, because, you know, if he ends up with 4 or 5 rings, then he's sort of sorted for the next phase of his life.
But that means, I mean, he can have four or five rings in the next 30 seconds. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's funny. It was a competitive game, but the way it ended with J.R. Smith, with George Hill, who's an 80% free throw shooter, missing the free throw that would have put them ahead, and then J.R. Smith, for some reason, dribbling out the clock instead of putting a shot up because he apparently thought the Cavs were ahead. You knew that the Dubs were going to win by fucking 27 in overtime.
And like you said, they put the look. I literally had to go for a really quick meeting. Like the game went to overtime. I'm like, I'll just quickly go to this meeting, come back. I'm just like, fuck me. And you put it, you know, you said that the Dubs are going to win by 15, and they did it in 4 minutes of overtime.
Yeah.
And I think
I said when I said the Dubs were going to win by 15, I was on the Bulls account. That was when they were playing JaVale. And I was like, they've got this cunt out here for comic relief. Mm-hmm. They've literally got the comic relief from an action 80s action movie out here doing slapstick bullshit and failing, you know, unable to dunk from standing beside the hoop, and he's tall enough to be able to drop the ball in. They've got him out there for lols. They're still going to win by 15.
Yeah.
And they almost did that anyway.
I really, because all of those guys are basically on 1 year contracts, all those end of the bench guys, you know, JaVale and Swaggy P and... Yeah, and
because they're minimum salary guys who got picked up for fuck all, because that's all you can afford once you've got all those other all-stars on your books.
I'd be really interested to see how Golden State front office reload, because it...
Well, they can only reload it in the bargain bin again.
Yeah, they can reload in the bargain bin, but will they reload with the same type of players, or will they go a little bit more small ball in there? You know, why have they got
Weren't
all these fucking
they
centers?
Do more with Caspi?
Yeah, that was the one. Like, why have you got McGee and Zaza on the bench when you like try and turn him into? Like, I know he didn't shoot well, but they didn't really persist with him that much. You know, they sort of played a lot of centers during, like, Zaza and McGee played a lot of minutes during the year that they could have played Caspi and tried to work him into the rotation. You know, when Clay went down, when Clay got undercut by JR, I just thought, oh, here we go, because, you know, the Warriors are, you know, an absolute weapon when they're rolling, but...
Yeah, JR hit that Dontas Monty-Unis Memorial wet spot and just went through and completely remixed Clay's knee, and everyone was going, oh, shit, that's the end of him, cruciate ligaments and all the rest of it. And Clay bounced back within a quarter. He was back on by early in the second quarter, which just tells you that shit is medicinal. It's not just a tag they put on it.
Dubs in five.
Sorry, I'll edit it so that your laughter is actually straight after the joke, so it's obvious that you got it.
No, I've just seen it before. Do we think that they're going to get bored enough to drop a couple of games in this series? Five or six?
They were almost bored enough to drop this one, weren't they? I mean, really, they were still fuffing about. They still felt like they had it completely in the bag, and they were doing... I know quite a Jack Brabham's I was reminded of. Jack Brabham, the 3-time Formula One world champion. And his argument was always that you should, you know, there's no point in trying to go out and showboat. You should be trying to win at the slowest possible speed. And don't do any more than you have to do to win a race. Because in those days, you know, cars would break and fall apart and all the rest of it. And the Warriors seem to be they're just going to, you know, play it to a draw and then sort it out in the last 2 minutes. Now, they almost fucked that up because they pissed around too much. Yeah. They should have lost that game.
Well, like they
should have hit two of those free throws, and J.R. shouldn't have fucked up. But
they should have really lost the Houston series, to be honest.
Yeah,
like a couple of lucky breaks and Houston win that series. Well, I'm really hoping that LeBron goes to Houston or Philly and makes a super team, and that the challenge, or Paul George goes to Houston. Like, what I want next season is for there to be a clear gun challenger.
Yeah.
So
I just can't stand this fucking... Actually, I'd rather it wasn't Houston, because Houston has got those inherent... in that inherent glass jaw that it's an NBA team, that you've got Harden, who's a marshmallow, really. You know, he's not in shape.
Do you reckon
he's only one side of the ball? And
do you reckon that went away a little bit this series? They did take them to seven with a very thin rotation.
They chose to have a thin rotation.
Yeah, I realise that, but.
There's certain disadvantages baked into the Rockets story.
Yeah,
the philosophical way they play the game,
the
coach they've got, and the stars they've got mean that they are going to be front runners. They're going to play really well a certain way. But if you punch them in the jaw, they're going to sink, and that's exactly what we saw. They had no starch to them.
Well, it's
when they started losing, they started losing big. So I'd rather LeBron didn't go to that team. I'd rather he went off and made something. He made a better Cavs or a better Heat somewhere else with young dudes and a decent coach. Because I don't actually believe he's had that for a long time. I mean, he had Spoelstra, but
yeah, I think.
And Lou,
I don't think
Lou's
good
at some things. Yeah, but he's not good at other things.
He's not a bad coach, but he's not a Spoelstra or a Pop or a, you know, a Kerr.
Send him to the Spurs.
Look. If Kawhi re-signed, even if Kawhi re-signed and they got him as a free agent and worked it out, that would be very fucking interesting. But I am convinced that the Spurs are going to trade Kawhi for the number one pick and those end of bench players. And the Suns, and Kawhi will bail after a year, and Doncic will turn into Duncan 2.0.
It's not going to matter, because the Suns aren't going to pick Doncic, because they're
no. But if they trade the hero. if they trade the pick, the Spurs absolutely fucking will. Though they're not that stupid.
Of course they would. But
I can't.
The Suns,
like, you think Simmons drives you fucking mad? Him talking about the Celtics scooping up Doncic, which is not a stupid. As it sounds, like trading up to number five and scooping him, because all these stupid fucking teams think that Europeans are soft and can't play in the NBA, even though we've had Manu Ginobili and Dirk Nowitzki and all those guys.
Let's be real. Doncic isn't getting past two.
You think Sacramento, with the Eastern European connection there, won't be able to let him pass?
Yeah, I'd be very, very confident that with Payar and Vlade, they're not letting a fellow itch anywhere. that's not happening. They'll take him. They'll definitely take him off your hands.
It's the Kangs, though. Fuck. Yes.
Yeah. The Kangs might... Yeah.
The Kangs are fighting that reputation. They've been relatively competent. You know,
the thing about them is I mean, they burnt a good pick on Papagiannis, which is unfortunate, but that was kind of the last of the pre-Scott Perry picks. I reckon the Kangs. The problem is the Kangs might be better than the Lakers next year, depending on what the Lakers get.
This is the thing,
Jordan Clarkson looked good on the Lakers. I mean, think about that. Jordan Clarkson looked like a competent fucking basketball player on the Lakers.
Yeah.
On the Kings, he does not look like. I mean, I was power ranking Clarkson's. Jordan's behind Alistair. He's definitely behind Kelly. The only Clarkson I can think of that he's ahead of is Jeremy, because Jeremy's a cunt. But I mean, he's. And you look back at that Lakers trade, and all of it is trash.
Yeah.
Every part of it. Isaiah Thomas, trash. Channing Frye, washed. For Nance, he's an energy player and did some good D. And Clarkson, absolute rubbish.
Yeah.
That entire part of the fucking the trade was a waste of fucking time. It was mainly just to get Isaiah Thomas the fuck out the building because he was a pain in the ass.
There's a lot of players that have killed, like Clarkson and Hood. They even gang to get, I guess they'll get like end of the bench contracts. I mean,
Hood's out of the rotation. Is he injured?
No, he did the Scottie Pippen thing and refused to come off the bench in garbage time. And so he's been buried.
Well, didn't Scotty refuse to come off the bench in a game-winning situation because the play hadn't been called for him?
Mm.
Garbage time's slightly different. That's interesting. I didn't pick that up.
He played a few minutes in the last game against the Celtics, but essentially Lou's gone.
How far has he fallen? Because he was probably one of the better parts out of that.
Well, he went into the start of that season with the Jazz going, Hayward's not here. I'm next up to be, you know, the scorer, the creator.
If we recorded next Saturday, you wouldn't be surprised if the series was over by then, because the game four is next Saturday, and that could be game four in a four love and LeBron waving goodbye to Cleveland, because I mean the cards are falling right for LeBron to get the fuck out of Dodge, aren't they?
Well, this is the other thing, right? LeBron, out of all the players that are in the NBA, is the most acutely aware of narrative and the way that narrative works in the NBA. I think he is aware of it in a way that no one else really is, because he went into a situation where he wasn't aware of it with the Heat, and it burnt him so badly that I think he learnt how that works in the NBA and started to use it for his advantage. And I really do think that this whole season of 82 games, 46 minutes in a finals game, 48 minutes in a finals game, 50 in an overtime game, he can walk out of Cleveland and go, I gave you fuckers everything. I left nothing.
And they'll still burn his jersey.
Oh, yeah, because there's some fuckwits.
They should be burning literally every other player on that fucking roster's jersey instead of his.
But I don't actually think it's for the local Cleveland fans. I think it's for the LeBron fans, you know, the guys that, you know, owned his Cleveland jersey. Now, then they owned his Heat jersey. And if he went to the Minnesota Timberwolves next year, they wouldn't give a fuck about the Timberwolves, but they would buy LeBron Timberwolves jerseys.
Yeah. He gets the number 23 too if he goes there, doesn't he? I mean, Jimmy Butler gets that pearl off his back.
do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, for sure. To be honest, the political state of the country helps with that, because the NBA fandom being what it is, they know what sort of people the people of Cleveland are.
Mm.
So if they turn on him, that's only going to make LeBron more popular in the rest of the country, in the rest of the NBA supporting country.
And speaking of shade, How was Dan Gilbert's high five left hanging at the end of the cell? That was just brutal.
Yeah, that was fucking out of there.
That was brutal. Look, the only way he stays in Cleveland is if they figure out a way to sell him part of the team. That's the
can't do that because they've got cap accountants to stop that sort of shit happening.
Mm.
But that was why that game was so awful. Was you see someone who had one of the most amazing performances in NBA history, and he just got fucked.
Mm.
He got absolutely fucked by incompetent idiocy. And like I said, it was like watching one of those prestige dramas that exists to torture its audience like a Walking Dead. Like one of those things that really likes digging the fucking nails in. And it sucked. I hated it.
Yeah.
And it didn't make me like watching basketball at all. And then there was a whole lot. The only fun part was the fact that when it was all over in overtime, Tristan Thompson started a stink and Dre was out giving it heaps. And so there's, as somebody tweeted, Pete Blackburn it was actually, he writes for CBS, he said, there's going to be a lot of scores to settle in this series and JR won't know any of them.
That's good. I missed that one. That was fantastic. Yeah. But look, the NBA won't stop once the finals are over. It'll just begin, you know. Well,
it was funny because I listened to a podcast with Matt Moore and Zach Harper today, and Matt Moore was saying his wife was sort of saying, "You seem so relaxed about this," and he said, "Yeah, it kind of feels like the season's already over, and this is just kind of the it's the last day of term kind of feeling. It's already so. That's probably where all that nihilism comes in handy. It's such a foregone conclusion that you totally chill about it.
Interesting little stat to finish off this series with. The Warriors have made the third most finals in NBA history. Just generally. Like, I would have thought that, well, obviously in their past history.
Where were they from originally? When they had, where were they transplanted from? Was it Brooklyn?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. But I guess they've made four plus whatever their, you know, they'd won one before this, hadn't they? That wasn't their first finals win when they won with this 70, team.
75?
So, like, you think of a team like the Spurs, but they've only really made six finals. They've made the finals that they've made with the, you know, with the Duncan teams.
Well, they were an ABA team. They were.
They were an Eastern Conference team. Because people were talking about the fact that, you know, the last time both East and West Conference went to seven games, and the Eastern Conference was the Bullets versus the Spurs. I just went, what? Hello? How does that work?
Cowboy-centric series. But that was because they were trying to figure out places to put all the ABA teams that they'd brought across, the Pacers, the Nuggets, the Spurs, and the Nets, I think, were the only. There might have been one or two others that survived the ABA, the integration thereof.
Okay, Doctor, did you want to sizzle our World Cup competition?
We'll have a World Cup competition.
Excellent.
It's not time for the World Cup just yet. We haven't announced the final squads. Haven't been announced. I think Tim Cahill may make it. Cross fingers for that guy because he can really use that young plucky charger. He could really use it.
I did want to ask you: is Gareth Bale the least liked superstar in football at the moment?
No, that's always Cristiano Ronaldo. Fuck Real Madrid. Actually, it's Sergio Ramos who tried to pull Mohamed Salah's arm out of his socket and was going to look like Salah was not only knocked out of the Champions League final last weekend, but he also looked like he was going to miss some World Cup games. It sounds like he will be fit to play Egypt's World Cup games, but Bale got subbed in late, about 70 minutes into the game with the game locked up at 1-1, and scored two absolute fucking worldies. One bicycle kick that was better than the Cristiano Ronaldo's much vaunted one, and another rocket from distance that Karius, the goalkeeper, managed to spill. Karius had been culpable for the first goal Liverpool conceded when he just sort of kicked the ball at a Real Madrid defender who kicked it back past him into the goal, which is bad. And Karius may have to leave the fucking country rather than play for Liverpool again. It's not going well for him. Earlier that day, the promotion playoff was in the Premier League was won by Fulham over Aston Villa. Aston Villa are an old side. That's Mila Jednak's side. Their total age of their back four was 132, whereas Fulham's average age of their team is in the mid 20s. They've got a really gun striker called Ryan Sessegnon, who only turned 18 the week before the playoff. They played all the football, and good luck to them. So they might be all right in the Prem as long as all their players don't get picked off. They've got a really cashed up owner though, so they're going to be able to afford to spend in Premier League environments. Their owner is Shad Khan, who is a Pakistani American who made his fortune making bumper bars for Toyota pickups. He ran a company that did that. He was an automotive engineer. But he also owns the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he is bidding to buy Wembley off the English FA, which is pissing off the English taxpayer because they subsidised the construction of Wembley quite extensively. And, of course, Wembley famously went way over budget and way over time. But we're going to have a World Cup tipping competition. There's still a couple of weeks before the World Cup actually starts up, but it's on the it'll be on the FIFA's match predictor site. If there's interest, we might also do a fantasy comp, pick the team sort of thing.
I want to do that just for the laughs, because you know, well, my my Adam H. Photo level knowledge of players versus your intimate knowledge of players and see who wins.
Well, let's be real. It doesn't take any intelligence to win these sorts of things. Which brings us back to the NBA bracketology competition, where the winner, the leader, as we go into the final round, the finals, is a man who has no interest or knowledge of basketball, Bernie Tebolt, our motorsport correspondent, who is leading with 260 points. He has tipped a Warriors championship, as has your man Pat, who is second on 245 to Bernie's 260, as has Adam H. Photo, who's on 230 points. So those guys, the winner between those, I think, is probably set. It will just come down to who has picked the Warriors in the correct number of games. Because, of course, if the Cavs somehow pull this out, it's going to be the thing. And the only difference between them is that Adam's picked the Warriors in 5, Bernie and Pat have picked it in 6. So if Adam nails it, I think there might be enough of a bonus in the... If it's in 5, I think there might be enough bonus points for picking the margin that Adam might win the comp. Otherwise, I think it's going to be holding of serve, and I think Bernie might win this, which is...
hilarious.
In its way, hilarious.
Well,
You and I suck. Yeah. So,
well, that's obvious, mate. People are listening to this podcast.
Yes. Well, it might have been the fact that, I mean, in hindsight, it seems ridiculous that I picked the Rockets to win it all and you picked the 76ers, which is not ideal.
Yeah, maybe I was a year early on that.
It could be. Could be a bit more than that.
Speaking of motorsport and Australians done good, which is the more impressive? The Indy 500 or the Monaco
an
GP.
American journalist was claiming that Will Power winning the Indy 500 blew Dan Ricciardo winning the Monaco Grand Prix out of the water. I was thinking, you don't understand that outside America, the Indy 500 is not what it used to be. I mean, it's still the biggest one-day race. It's the biggest one-day sporting event in the world in terms of crowd. I mean, they get 300,000 people there. But it was not a classic Indy 500 because the way the downforce package is on the current car, it didn't really encourage close racing. But almost the most dramatic part was watching his very, very nervous wife, who's a Texan, just completely losing her shit, and then him completely losing his shit. There was quite a lot of shit being lost, to the point where I thought the Americans might be terrified of the fact that he got the absolute mounties of won the big race. But the bigger achievement, I think, was not just because I think Monaco is more important than Indy, was Dan Ricciardo winning the Monaco Grand Prix in a car that had probably 25% less horsepower than everyone else because he had a hybrid unit failure about a quarter of the way into the race, and he had to sort of nurse it to the end with this kind of ailing car that didn't even have enough horsepower to pull top gear on the straight.
Wow.
And because that was the hybrid regeneration that regenerated, it was what they call the MGUK. K is in kinetic, so that's the energy recovery on the brakes. Because it failed, his rear brakes were overheating as well. So he had to push the brake bias a long way forward. So the thing wasn't braking properly, and it wasn't pulling properly in a straight line, and it was dead all his power. And he was still able... I mean, admittedly, it's hard to pass around Monaco. But because the thing was still so gentle on its tyres, and the McLaren and the Mercedes were graining their tyres, you know, a little bit like... if you get like a school eraser and you drag it along a piece of paper, it gets all that kind of fine, granular kind of graining. That's kind of what happens to a Formula One tire if it's not working properly. You haven't really got it, you know, bedded into the surface. So the Ferrari and Mercedes were having lots of problem with graining. The Red Bulls were actually, although the thing was absolutely gutless.
It's a good track to have a skilled defensive driver though. Monaco?
Yeah, it is. It's hard to get past it at Monaco. It's always been. There was a famous Grand Prix where Nigel Mansell had the race shot to bits. He was heading for his 6th win of the year in a row, and he had a late tyre puncture. He went into the pits, came out behind Senna, and Senna blocked him for the last couple of laps.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it's held up as a classic when it was just a man blocking for someone else who's trying to come past. But the fact is that when it happened, Red Bull was saying, we're going to have to retire the car in one or two laps. He went on and won the fucking race with it. So
yeah, that's good.
Shouts to him.
And I want to finish with another Australian overseas performance, which is excellent. A fat, overweight man.
Oh, this is amazing. Yeah, I did see this. Was that look? I was watching the highlights of this. This is the IPL final between Stephen Fleming and Mike Hussey's Concrete Mixers and Tom Moody's Orange Roughies. And I discovered Shane Watson was still being paid to play cricket, which I thought was hilarious. And then he proceeded to block out two overs and looked fucking terrible. And I thought, it's even more hilarious that you're pulling a wage still to play cricket because you're fat and washed. And then what happened?
Like blocking in a T20 game. But it was actually...
He was literally 7 off 14 at one point. And he went on to be 117 of 57, including three consecutive sixes.
But this is where the IPL... And we've talked about this before, about how the IPL is going to be where statistics and analytics really helps in cricket, because for a start, Fleming had looked at the analytics of Watson's current form in the Australian comp and then the Pakistani comp and went, this guy's got a bit of juice left. We can get value out of him at the money we're going to pay for him. And we'll put him, you know, we won't sort of pick him up for nothing and play him at six and waste him. We'll pick him in his right spot and, you know, hope that he comes off for us a couple of times. But then they also gave him the feedback that, hey, the guy that opens the bowling for this side, if you try and tee off on him, he's going to get you out. You cannot tee off on him. You know, you can try and get a single, but do not tee off on him. So he didn't. And they were confident enough in that game plan that they were not panicking after he got none off 10 balls or something. And then he, what, got 117 off 50 balls? It was
just... That's pretty much it. Well, it would have been 110 off fucking
40 ball. Yeah.
46, something like that.
Yeah, crazy.
That's Brendan McCullum areas.
Yep.
But at one point, Matthew Hayden was in commentary and he said he's hit that one like an exorcist missile, which probably explains why Matty Hayden hasn't been picked up along with a lot of the other guys to go and be on Channel 7. It's interesting to note that the Channel 9 Super Kings, or they sound like a pack of cigarettes, but are actually a concrete company, have been in the finals six times out of the last 7 years they've been eligible. And I must say eligible. In the last 2 years, they were banned. They were suspended for 2 years because their owner was involved in betting on things. But they really are a remarkable team. And you'd have to think that Stephen Fleming, who's been at the helm for fucking ever of that side, he would have to be the next New Zealand coach if and when Mike Hessen ever stops being really good at being the New Zealand coach, if they can afford him, of course. And Mike Hussey's now in the coaching organisation there, which is certainly not going to hurt Australia, because that is as good an IPL franchise as is run anywhere in the world, betting on games notwithstanding.
I do want to have a quick little bitch, though, before we finish about cricket, because Vo just got the WA job. And look, he might be a good coach, but he's only been out of the game for fuck all time. He wouldn't have done, you know, it's not like he's been coaching in the IPL for 6 years like a Fleming or, you know, some of those ex-players that have actually learnt their craft as a coach.
Yeah, but this is much more like what they do in soccer, where they literally come straight off the playing field and becomes a coach and learns how to be a coach on the job.
Yeah, it's just like you... It looks like you can only be a coach in Australia if you're an ex-test player.
But that's not surprising. That's not really surprising. Mind you, Trevor Bayliss wasn't a test player and he's currently doing a shit job for England. England lost by 9 wickets to Pakistan in the first test, which makes Ireland taking it to the final day and I think Pakistan only won like four or five down. They actually looked pretty good. Damien Cam Bancroft are playing in some Northern Territory,
and I think Steve Smith, our Twitter friend, is playing in Canada.
Yeah, so he won't. You know, we'll see you in the NT to Damien Cam, but Smudge is off to Canada. It should be nice and warm there.
This is a shame.
The Origin teams are out. I'll just wrap up some other bits and pieces. The Origin teams are out. New South Wales are very heavy on debutants, i.e. dudes who haven't lost to Queensland yet. And Queensland, there was another slap in the face for Wayne Bennett when his son Darius Boyd was dropped from the Queensland side. So that must be, you know, it's talk about kicking man when he's down. Probably need to talk about, when we're talking about Gareth Bale. His coach quit. Zinedine Zidane had just coached Real Madrid to three consecutive Champions League trophies, but he'd also coached them to one of the worst performances in the league for quite a few years, where they'd finished a distant third. They'd been beaten by their city rivals, Atletico, and they were like 27 odd points behind Barcelona. It was almost like they felt a lot like an all-star team. They felt like, you know, everyone was out there to get their own. And even after winning the game, Gareth Bale was saying, "This is all great, but I'm probably going to need to move because I need to play first-team football." And Cristiano Ronaldo was dropping hints that he was going to fuck off as well. And it was sort of a reminder that they were a team of champions, not a champion team, to use the old cliche. And it's almost like they felt like regular season Golden State Warriors. They just couldn't get their shit to be up for, you know, a home and away
a league
grind.
That didn't really matter.
Yeah, they couldn't focus. It should matter, but they just couldn't motivate themselves or get the stuff together. And then in the end, that comes down to the coach. And Zidane said, "Look, these guys need another voice. They need a new voice. I need to go off and do something else."
So what will he do? Will he go and coach France in the next World Cup?
Look, I think he'll chill for a bit. I think France are pretty comfortable with where they are right now. Didier Deschamps is doing okay. I think he's just going to sit and wait and see what his next opportunity is. He's been ever since he joined Real, which was, you know, a long time ago. He's been a lifer there, so it's going to be a little bit weird to see him somewhere else. It's a bit like Guardiola being somewhere else. So that's going to be interesting. But yeah, it's a bit of an era ender for that
because
generation of Real teams, because Bale's going to leave and Cristiano's going to leave and some of the other guys are getting quite old, so it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out.
Because he's never really had an England connection, Zidane, has he?
No. He never played.
So him going and coaching Chelsea or Man City would just not really be in the cards.
Well, the Chelsea job would be open. In fact, the Chelsea are looking at who they're going to hire because the guy they were looking at was Mauricio Sarri, who was the head of Napoli. They've cooled on a little bit recently, so
did the French team that bought Neymar and then didn't they sack their coach? Have they got a coach yet?
But they've signed. They've picked up Thomas Tuchel.
Ah, okay, so it's not like he was resigning to go to that job.
And the former boss of PSG. Is now the boss of Arsenal, Unai Emery, and there was some suggestion that Arsene Wenger was a front runner for the Real Madrid job, but it might have just been betting stuff. So it is a little bit of musical chairs.
Yeah. All right, Doc. I've got musical thoughts, so let's wrap this up and come back next.
Segue. This was the Balls Podcast. I was the Doc. I will continue to be the Doc even after we stop recording. He is and was and will continue to be Bezo. You can follow us on the internets.
Possibly.
And we will talk to you next week.
See ya.